And there's intimacy on the radio, and there's naturalness on the radio that can never be replicated on TV. The marvelous resurgence of radio as a political force in this country.
News-related radio programming is evolving.
There's a huge hole in our dialogue that can be filled by the synthesis of traditional radio and the freedom that comes from a live podcast. You're about to experience Cowboy State Politics Live. Here we go. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to yet another incredible installment of Cowboy State Politics Live from very high above all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media. This is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. Happy Thursday. Today, I'm joined in the studio by Representative Ken Pendergraft. Ken has quite a bit to say on this whole BLM thing. And then at the bottom of the hour, we have Republican Majority Floor Leader Chip Nyman, who's going to join us to talk more about the BLM situation. He's got a lot of thoughts of his own that, frankly, this whole BLM thing, it really absolutely drives me bonkers. It didn't start this year. It didn't start with Sleepy Joe. It didn't even start with Barack Obama. Plans were laid long before then. But if you listen to yesterday's program, I showed you the links from before Obama was even elected all the way up through what's happening now. I mean, so this thing started a really long time ago, and we're just now seeing the effects of it. So anyway, Ken, welcome to the program.
Always good to be here. I should say, though, we're so high above everybody else that I'm feeling a little bit of elevation sickness, I think.
Yeah, a little lightheaded.
Altitude, yeah.
Yeah, well, it happens. You know, it takes a little getting used to.
It does, but thankfully you have installed the oxygen tanks here, and I think I might be able to make it through the hour.
So, Ken, did you watch the debate last night?
No.
Neither did I, and I tried to avoid it, and then the news this morning was just peppered with ridiculous things. Sound bites, montages. And I couldn't resist. I had to put a montage together of my own. You want to hear it?
Yes, David, please.
Oh, you sound super excited about it.
Oh, I'm thrilled.
So what are your thoughts on President Trump not being in attendance?
I think he's doing exactly the right thing by not being there. He makes himself the story that's not a story. I think it's a brilliant move.
You know, when I was debating in high school and college, I was always told by coaches, you know, never argue with a pig. They'll drag you down to their level, and you'll get dirty too. They'll beat you with experience, and maybe that's what he's up to. I mean, I agree with you that I don't see any reason for him to show up at the debate.
I don't know that Trump is ever afraid to get down and dirty, but he has nothing to win. He has nothing to gain from being there. He has a substantial lead in virtually all the polls. And of course, at this point, they're not legitimate polls. They're just simply trying to shape the way that people think.
Yeah, I don't think that this far out that you could derive any useful information out of any poll whatsoever. I mean, it's just, like you said, it's just kind of a long shot at best. Well, let's take a listen to this little montage that I have.
Oh, yes, let's.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to handle it for very long, but here we go.
We'll find out.
Watching, okay? And you're not here tonight not because of polls and not because of your indictments. You're not here tonight because you're afraid of being on the stage and defending your record. You're ducking these things. And let me tell you what's going to happen. You keep doing that, no one up here is going to call you Donald Trump anymore. We're going to call you Donald Duck.
Okay. All right. Really? That's the best that he could come up with? Donald Duck?
What are we, 9 years old? Have you gotten to junior high yet?
Oh, man. Just wait until you hear the rest of this thing. But the conversation has devolved into ridiculous one-liners. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. And, you know, Chris Christie, he's not a serious candidate anyway. His entire platform is let's bash Donald Trump. I mean, that's it. There's nothing else to the guy. Did you know, Ken, that when he left office, he had an approval rating of 8%?
I'm a little surprised it was that high.
8. How do you yeah. even do that?
Yeah, and how do you try to take yourself seriously? I have no clue about some of these people. It's a sad commentary on society and who these people think we are by the topics and the one-liners and the little short snippets, the sound bites that they come up with. It's a sad reflection on what they think about us.
Well, wait, here's some more of it.
All right. I want to ask
Donald Trump is missing in action. He should be on this stage tonight. He owes it to you to defend his record, where they added $7.8 trillion to the debt.
Because last debate, he said we were all bought and paid for. And I thought about that for a little while and said, you know, I can't imagine how you could say that, knowing that you were just in business with the Chinese Communist Party and the same people that funded Hunter Biden, millions of dollars, was a partner
this
of yours as well. It's not nonsense.
So look, I want to respond. These are good people who are tainted by a broken system. And it's not the fault of anybody who's involved.
Some of us are tainted.
Excuse me. Thank you for speaking while I'm interrupting.
Against unusual punishment.
Yeah, I don't
cruel
know.
Cruel and unusual.
I am inflicting it on you right now.
This is asinine in light of what's going on with Hunter and Joe Biden. They've got, what was the last thing they came up with, is $260,000 directly to Joe Biden at his home.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that here in just a minute. So it gets better, Ken.
You can't be on both sides.
Gentlemen, you'll have your turn.
One of the challenges,
we should have a debate between...
All right, I can't take it. I can't take it anymore. Oh, Lord. But, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head, Ken. I think you hit the nail on the head, Ken, in that we have so many problems going on. And we are supposed to believe that these are the most important issues that these people are interested in. And I understand they have to set themselves aside from apart from each other, but really, I mean, this is the way that you do it. You know, at the end of that soundbite, Nikki Haley looks at Vivek Ramaswamy and says, "You know, I feel dumber every time you speak." And I mean, it's funny, but I mean, it doesn't add anything to the conversation. I mean, like I say, we got so many things going on right now, and this is what these people want to do.
It is. It's absurd. It kind of leaves you speechless, and yet you could go on for hours.
Well, okay. So let's move on a little bit and let's talk about one of those serious issues. From Breitbart this morning, in an article entitled "Hunter Lived in California When Chinese Partners Wired Money to Joe Biden's Delaware Address." So the first thing I want to play for you is something that Harriet said during our interview. Let's see here. Where is it? There it is.
I give a speech and I talk about different inflection points that change the course of our history, of the history of the United States. And one of them I talk about is the election of Bill Clinton and then bringing along his wife Hillary into that mess. But the reason why Bill Clinton's election was so significant was he's the one who monetized the White House. And what I say is that if the children of Ronald Reagan or Richard Nixon or Gerald Ford or Jimmy Carter walked in my door right now, I would not know who they are. I don't know that you could recognize, and some of them were quite famous at one time. Yet under the Clintons, everybody knows who Chelsea Clinton is. Everybody knows who Hunter Biden is. Everybody knows who the Obama daughters were. What the Clintons did is they monetized the White House, and they found a way to personally enrich themselves to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars simply because he at one point was a politician. Well, Joe Biden looked at that business model. He and his wife looked at that business model. His kids and his brother and sister, they looked at that business model and they said, sign me up.
Make millions and millions and millions of dollars off of an office you hold under the auspices that you're going to represent the people. What do you think about that, Ken?
Represent the people. I put up a post last night on Facebook.
I think everybody saw that one.
It said, we have to stop electing people that represent agencies and not the people. And I've brought some examples whenever you're ready to do that. I do want to eventually get into the BLM thing, but this dovetails with it, is the idea that these people are not there, especially in D.C., but it's also very, very true, as I'll prove here shortly, even in Cheyenne. They're not there to represent you, the people. And when you do stand up, as I have done on numerous occasions, and say the one person or the one point of view that has not been here at this committee meeting is the voter, the taxpayer at the bottom of the pile. And I have been rebuked. I have been shut up. They called an emergency management meeting and tried to enhance the rules of committees so that this sort of thing would never happen again. And we're only just getting started.
Yeah. I mean, I if you attend any committee meeting down in Cheyenne, it's obvious that agencies are listened to before you are, that advocacy groups get to go before you do. And if there is any time left, then you might get to talk. And my favorite out of all of them is Steve, former Redcoat Speaker of the House, Steve Harshman. When the public gets up to talk, he goes into this long spiel, and he does it every time. And he says, okay, we have this much time left, and I don't really care how you divide it up, but we only have this much time. Frankly,
there could be 60 people sitting out there, but we've only got 15 minutes.
Exactly right. But the people should be listened to before then. But I want to hit on one point before we move on. And I mean, you've got some sound bites you want to listen to. So
yeah. It's your show though, so you take the lead.
Well, I will. So anyway, this article from Breitbart this morning, it quote, Hunter Biden did not reside with President Joe Biden in Delaware when his Chinese business partners wired money to Joe Biden's address in 2019. Joe Biden's address received two wires from BHR Partners Associates linked with the CCP, that's Chinese Communist Party, in July and August, totaling $260,000, House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer revealed on Tuesday. The time frame detailed in Hunter Biden's collapsed plea deal in July with now special counsel David Weiss, who he's a biggest member of the Weasel family in Wyoming, or in the United States. He says that Hunter Biden's residence was in California when the Chinese partners sent money to Joe Biden's address. Hunter Biden remained in California and spent much of the summer of 2019 painting and developing plans for his memoir. The plea deal states on page 9, in Hunter Biden's memoir, Beautiful Things, the president's son also noted that he lived in California at the time his Chinese partners wired money to Delaware. Now, there's only two reasons why they would do that. Either A, they were giving it to Joe Biden, or B, they were giving it to Hunter Biden, and he was just cutting out the middleman and giving it back to Sleepy Joe.
He was probably overdue by the due date.
Yeah.
Dad, call in the marker.
I mean, there is no question that that this impeachment inquiry needs to continue. In my mind, there's no question that President Biden is guilty of bribery on several different levels. Interestingly enough, Ken, how many times is bribery mentioned in the Wyoming Constitution?
I can't say off the top of my head.
I believe it's four different passages that mention bribery. So why do you suppose that is? Well, I'll answer. Because it's the very definition of corruption. I mean, and it's the one thing that you can look at a politician, and if they've accepted a bribe, they're not acting on your behalf, they're not acting on anybody else's behalf except their pocketbook. Now, Ken, down in Cheyenne, you see this, maybe not bribery a lot, but you see a lot of special interests in committee meetings, and they always testify first. And sometimes, I mean, they might have a 2-hour committee meeting, and over half of it is taken up by agencies and lobbyists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we mentioned earlier that it's not the people that get to talk. So after the break, I want you to pick it up and just talk to us about, you know, who these people are actually representing. I shouldn't have to remind you about any of this, but hunting season is here, my friends, and it's time for you to start gearing up for it. I know that's going to make the wife extraordinarily happy, but it has to be done. One of the best things that you can put in your hunting pack is a pair of really warm socks. And the best socks that I have ever worn are made by the Buffalo Wool Company. Most of the time, the first thing to get cold on my body are my feet. And being a diabetic like I am, I'm really, really sensitive to it. Now, I've tried Pendleton wool socks and just about every kind of wool sock that you could possibly imagine, and nothing compares to these Buffalo Wool Company socks. To get you a pair, go to their website, thebuffalowoolco.com. Trust me, you are not going to be disappointed. Wyoming is one of the most sought-after places to live. I talk about it all the time on this program. There's a lot of people that want to move to our great state. There's beautiful mountain vistas all the way from Sheridan to Saratoga and from Hewlett all the way to Jackson. It's an amazing place, and there's a ton of people that are moving here. If you're buying or selling, you need a real estate agent with experience. The best person to talk to is Rebecca Bextel at Compass Real Estate. Last year, she sold $25 million worth of property all across the state of Wyoming, from small residential properties all the way up to giant ranches. She's lived in Jackson for 20 years and has her fingers on the pulse of the real estate market all across the state of Wyoming. So it doesn't matter what type of property you're looking for or if you're thinking about selling, give Rebecca a call, 307-699-3519. That's Rebecca Bextel at Compass Real Estate. The program, David Iverson, documented to be almost always right, 98.82% of the time. If you're just joining the program, I have Representative Ken Pendergraft as my co-host. We might have a couple other people join the program a little bit later. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Majority Floor Leader Chip Nyman come on the program and talk about what's been happening with the BLM and their environmental impact statement. So we'll do that at the bottom of the hour. But first, Ken brought a couple sound bites with him, and he wants to talk specifically about who is representing whom or who is not representing whom.
Exactly. When you sit in on these committee meetings and you look around the room, virtually everybody in there is wearing a name badge, and that name badge proves that they're either a lobbyist or they represent some agency. And so how many of you have felt a little bit of a struggle with inflation of late? Well, you know, it doesn't just hit us. It also hits these agencies. But there is a preconceived notion among these committees that these agencies must be adequately funded no matter what. And the idea that we would go and audit them is reprehensible to them. We've tried to suggest that several times, and it's been beaten back ad infinitum. But go ahead and play that first one. Now, this is at both the Transportation and Education Committees, and it just took me a few minutes last night to throw together some samples that David had asked me to do. There are a gazillion of them, and they're all talking about the horrors of inflation and what it's doing to their agencies.
Again, these are actual collections. Nothing is adjusted here for inflation. So if you think about this, the amount of inflation that we've experienced in 2014, really the revenues aren't keeping up with.
So who's talking right there, Ken? Is that a lobbyist?
That is the CFO for YDOT.
Okay.
With, you know, our ability to, our buying power. So just something to keep in mind there. Continue to collect it on the 13 cents. Now, with inflation, Mr. Chairman, we're probably with raises and inflation since, you know, at least 10 years ago, we're probably going to have to start to collect up to the full 2% of what's allowed in statute regarding that fuel tax distribution for admin.
So really, if you're trying to orient yourself today, what's the purpose of today? It's to hear the information from your staff, consultants, and the Department of Education and public testimony on the necessity of any necessary inflation adjustment to the K-12 funding model. Would then be to make its own independent recommendation on any inflationary adjustment for next school year. It'd be school year 24-25.
Okay, hold on. I know I'm like stopping and starting in your own soundbite. But Ken, how much does the education budget go up every single year without you guys having to vote on it?
It's kind of on autopilot. There is a model set up that, according to the population in each of the schools, the model kicks in. I don't even want to get sidetracked down in the how. That was, I think his name is Matt Walmont. His job is to make sure that the schools are adequately funded. And of course, any answer that ever comes back, well, of course, we have no choice. And so I've set up another set of sound bites with Senator Pappas. And the reason that I did this, and yeah, I'm calling him out, and I hope that somebody lets him hear this, because what he did there was, in my mind, reprehensible. And I'll let you play that series of sound bites. It's a little bit of what happened at Transportation. There's one sound bite there that you've got, David, but it's got two different phases, and there's a pause in there. So during that pause, I'll kind of set it up. Just let it play.
Okay, so we're still on the first one, or you want to move to the second one?
Jump to the second one. The first one is just everybody that comes in there complains about inflation is affecting us. We've got to have adjustments for inflation. My point is, what is the individual at home, the taxpayer at the bottom of the hill, supposed to do? You got to work harder, or you got to cut back.
Right.
You don't have the choice just to go out and order up more money.
Okay, let's listen to it.
Yeah.
I point out to the committee that the reason Colorado's tax is so low is they can't raise taxes down there. They have to do it. The people have to do it at the ballot box. But they do have many, many fees. And so while that is low, understand that they put fees on everything. For instance, I was just talking to the chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee in Colorado, Faith Winters, and she told me they just raised their delivery charge for Amazon, 27 cents a package, now to 28 cents a package. Everything down there gets a delivery fee. If it uses the roads, it gets a delivery fee. So don't let that low tax, they get their money through fees.
And then a little later in the meeting, you hear this.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we're here this morning because we don't have money for our roads, right? And so we have to increase our revenue somewhere, right? And no one wants to see more taxes. What would your industry think if we didn't even talk about raising fuel taxes, but do what other states like Colorado I mentioned, put a delivery fee on every delivery.
I could start to break down those two comments, and I could spend 2 hours trying to point out everything that is wrong with that attitude. But the people in Colorado got tired of taxes going up all the time. And so they did a citizens initiative effectively. And they said, okay, we're not going to do this. If you're going to have a tax increase, we're going to vote it in. And so the government, not wanting anybody to go unfunded, any agency to go unfunded, simply says they create all these fees. Let's not call it a tax. It's a fee.
Well, that's so insidious, because you have agencies that can independently increase fees on their own. The one that comes to mind is the DMV. I mean, I don't know when the last time they raised fees were, but they can do it in and of themselves, right? There's all sorts of different agencies that can raise fees. And first of all, you don't realize that it's a tax, but it absolutely is. And well, it's like Representative Obermueller said, you know, if people don't know that they're being taxed, then it's okay. I've seriously got to go back and get that soundbite.
That's the problem with the attitude of the bulk, I'd say a majority of the legislators down there, is their job is to make sure that government agencies do not go improperly funded. You heard it over and over again in there. We're here today because we don't have enough money. If you don't have enough money right now with Wyoming sitting on $27 billion in assets, and we had an extra $2 billion left over before, what are you going to do when we really get in tough times? And this is just insidious was exactly the word that I was thinking about, because they are not representing the best interests of the taxpayers who are paying these things, who are at the bottom of the hill. They can't go out and just up their income. And there is nobody there in those committee meetings standing up for John Q. Public. So this is what needs to happen, folks. Number one, stop electing representatives who only represent agencies, and support and defend those representatives that actually do stand up for the people, and swap some butts in the seats.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, until we get people elected that are actually going to represent you and not special interests or their campaign donors, or, I mean, just make a list. I mean, none of these things are going to change. And this dumb idea that comes from people like Steve Harshman that say, oh no, we've got the lowest taxes in the entire country. Well, maybe by some crazy statistical percentage that he comes up with, but they don't seem that damn low. In fact, my family's taxes doubled.
Yep. There are organizations out there who have published all kinds of data that show that Wyoming is actually pretty heavily taxed.
Yeah.
It just depends on what form it takes. And a lot of them are clandestine. A lot of them, I call them in the last committee meeting I was in, sneaky taxes. And that's what it's about. But none of this is going to change, folks, at the state level or at the federal level without changing the butts in the seats.
I absolutely agree with you. Well, we're going to take a little bit of a break early. Like I said, we've got Representative Nyman coming up at 10:30. So we'll try to get through the break, and then we'll see what the majority floor leader has to say. We'll get back to the program in just a second, but first, some completely egregious self-aggrandizement. You can listen to the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting apps, iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, really any of them will work. But the easiest way is just to go to the website, cowboystatepolitics.com. There you can find all of the shows, as well as any of the articles that I might bring up during the course of a program. If your name is Sleepy Joe Biden and you're dumber than a box of rocks, well, you can go to cowboystatepolitics.com, pull up an article, and educate yourself, just like you should have been doing before you decided to run for office. New episodes of the program are published every Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday morning. And don't forget about the Thursday live episode that begins every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. You know, the show you're listening to right now. You can find the link at cowboystatepolitics.com or on the Cowboy State Politics Facebook page. Have you been looking for a new place to advertise your business? Well, I'd suggest advertising on this program, Cowboy State Politics. It's Wyoming's most listened to podcast. Now, the difference between advertising on the radio and on a podcast is most people just have the radio playing in the background and they're not actively listening to your message. People who download a podcast are there to listen to the whole thing, so you can be sure that your message will be heard. I have a statewide platform, and no one is going to beat my advertising rates. Shoot me a message. The address is david@cowboystatepolitics.com. I would love to get that conversation started with you. And now, back to the program. Welcome back to the program, Cowboy State Politics, broadcasting to you from the Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. If you've been listening to the program, you'll remember that recently Cowboy State Politics hit 200,000 downloads. That's enormous. In fact, I don't really think that it's been done in the state of Wyoming for an independent podcast. So keep listening to Cowboy State Politics. You know, those 200,000 downloads, they only happened because of you. And quite frankly, it is difficult for me to explain how important the Cowboy State Politics audience is to me. So you'll never guess who just walked into the studio. None other than Joey Corrente.
Well, good morning, boys. How you doing? And I want to say before we go any further, I'm looking at your live board here, and I got to say, hi, Mom. I see you're online there. Thanks, Linda, for listening.
All right. Well, we've got Representative Chip Nyman on the phone, and he's a busy guy, so let's not keep him waiting. Chip, welcome to the program.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you guys today?
Well, I think we're all doing pretty fantastic.
Good. Good to hear.
So, Chip, the reason I wanted you to come on the program is just to talk for a few minutes about all of this stuff, the EIS statement from the BLM, and what's actually going on and what it means for Wyoming citizens. So I think I'll just let you take it away and just give us your thoughts on it.
Well, it's as you well know, you've been watching the uproar now suddenly has really started to ramp up here. And I would say in the last, probably before, but what I've noticed an increase in the amount of interest in it and the amount of pushback that's been coming since our Select Water Joint Ag Committee meeting over there in Pinedale, when the BLM came before those two committees and kind of sat down and kind of explained some of where they're headed and what the reasoning is behind the selection of their alternative B versus the other alternatives that were worked on. And so it has really exploded. And I was very encouraged to see our governor come out with a letter here the other day that was genuinely pushing back and saying this is not something that we can stand as a state. And I think that was a lot of the result of a lot of the outcry that has been brought on in here. And I really appreciate all the work from the Freedom Caucus. They've been doing some Facebook Lives and really trying to shine a light on the impacts of what this is going to mean to us as a state and quite frankly, to us as a country. I mean, we see an administration right now that has really just basically rolled back the curtain on a full-out war on the West and our ability to be able to generate food and fiber here and utilize our extractive industry and promote our state and the energy that we provide and the security nationally that we provide through our energy development here in Wyoming. They don't like the way we do things around here. They think they've got a better plan, and their plan is not workable. It's not something that we can manage or handle as a state or a nation. And this is just another part of that effort to try to squelch or to limit the use of our lands. And I think people are really waking up to the reality that if we hadn't woke up and got on it, David, I guess my analogy is, and it was said by somebody far more astute than I am, it's very difficult to negotiate with a tiger when your head is in its mouth.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we are in a position now where we've got to stand up and we've got to say, you know what, we're not going to go for this. This is not sustainable. This is not doable. This is going to hurt all of our industries, from ag to recreation to our extractive industry to our logging industry. This is a full-on shot across the bow attack on our state as a whole, I believe, through the BLM, through the and it was no holds barred. It was no reservation. They said this was the request by the administration to pick the worst, most restrictive option of the four and set that out there and say, okay, folks, now here we're going to start here. You guys can start to negotiate from a bad position. And when you get offered, you can die by either being run over by a combine, cancer, being shot, or being attacked and mauled by a grizzly bear, but you get a pick. You know, that's not a very good place to be negotiating from. And I think the BLM and the current administration has real knives out for the state of Wyoming and how we do business as in general. And I think people are becoming quickly aware of it and they don't want it. And we're pushing back. And I think that's what we have to do in order to be able to survive and actually take the country in the right direction.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And, you know, this is a plan that, and again, if you haven't listened to yesterday's episode, you should go back and listen to it because I trace not necessarily the origins, but I go back to the Obama administration and show you how this has been the plan from the very beginning. Yep. it's not Sleepy Joe's plan. You know, it's Barack Obama and before him. But recently, mm-hmm. our Congresswoman Harriet Hageman was in a committee meeting, and she had one of the deputy directors of the BLM in front of her. His name is Michael Ned, and I'm going to play this soundbite and get your reaction to it. It's a little bit long, but I think you'll enjoy hearing it. And actually, I'm going to post a video at cowboystatepolitics.com because you guys have just got to see this guy's smarmy grin. I mean, it makes you want to jump through your monitor. But take a listen to this, and then I'll get your reaction to it.
Again, as we transition to a new energy economy, we're looking how to develop the resources, both renewable and non-renewable, Congresswoman. Okay. I am not aware of exporting jobs.
Unreliable, I think, is a better word to use. You recently issued the Rock Springs RMP, and this, I think, is an example of things to come. And every state that has federal lands within its borders, specifically BLM lands, should recognize what now the intent of the BLM is. This Rock Springs RMP will exclude, prohibit, and bar all access, management, and use of vast swaths of federal land throughout the United States. You exclude not only oil and gas development, but livestock grazing and recreation. And is it your intent to prohibit American citizens from accessing their lands?
Congresswoman, our intent is to use the land in a way that allows all Americans, both present and future generation, to enjoy and benefit from it.
Why is it that every policy this administration pursues is intended to create energy poverty?
I just can't agree with that premise, so I cannot answer to that.
How well do third world countries do in terms of protecting the environment?
Congresswoman, I'm not familiar with all.
Well, let's use the Congo as an example. Do those mining activities in the Congo comport with our mining laws, NEPA, ESA, and that sort of thing?
I am not familiar with the Congo's laws and rules.
You're not familiar with the fact that the vast majority of our cobalt comes from countries such as the Congo? You're not aware of that?
Congresswoman, you asked me if I'm aware of the law violating it, and I'm not familiar with the law.
Do you have any idea of whether Congo complies with child labor laws?
Again, you're asking me in a question.
Do you know whether the Congo complies with child labor laws? The answer is yes or no.
I have not studied Congo, so I cannot give you an answer.
Have you seen the videos of the little children out mining in the Congo to mine for cobalt so that we can have what you refer to as renewables?
I don't know what video you're speaking about, Congressman.
You haven't seen the videos.
I don't know what video you're speaking about,
Congressman. Do you think it is appropriate?
Okay. Go for it, Chip. What do you think of Michael Ned?
Oh, my God. How can you be so and that's a guy that's supposed to be heading up or part of the leadership of our – oh, my gosh. I mean, I'm a rancher in northeast Wyoming, and even I, with all the responsibility I have had an opportunity to see six-year-olds being paid 60 cents a day to crawl down into pits and mine shafts to drag cobalt out so that for China and other countries – now, bear in mind – China owns the major supplies of those cobalt mines in the Congo. They're dealing in that. Children as young as 6 and maybe younger are in mines digging out cobalt so that we can have batteries, so that we can do things in a more efficient and pleasant way. And it's ironic to me, David. The other day, I watched a video, and maybe this was an older video, of Nancy Pelosi standing at the podium trying to understand why the conservatives have such a disdain for our children, or you would be more interested in preserving our environment for the children. And yet we will gladly, because it's out of sight and out of mind, allow somebody else to go and put their children in harm's way so that we feel better about the environment. That in a nutshell, when you look at that, is the real disconnect in what we're dealing with here in this green energy, in the renewable idea of this. They don't talk about that because it doesn't fit their narrative. It's not pretty. It's not waving green grass and windmills set against a blue sky and a green field of hay in front of it. That is the reality of what it's taking to make what they want to happen. And along with that, you've also got to take away the ability of Americans, in this case, and as a microcosm of it, the RMP at Rock Springs, ability to be able to produce and manufacture and to employ our people's ability. Because we've got to do everything we can to shut off what America needs to do to protect itself, but we're not one bit concerned about what's happening anywhere else in the world, and we certainly don't want to hold them to any kind of account, but we'll cut our own nose off to spite our face in this country, and all the while touting it's for the children. Why are we not for the children if we're not for this? Well, I don't know that those kids and those families that are in abject poverty are necessarily having anybody look out for them as they're mining the properties, the minerals that we need to be able to drive green, efficient cars at 6 years old at 60 cents or 65 cents a day.
I think you're exactly right.
Is that right?
I think it's ridiculous. It's absolutely.
And it's heartbreaking. And that's the thing. When you sit here and you watch all this play out, they act like as if we're not worried about whether or not China has got scrubbers on their smokestacks, but we'll shut down the ability of Americans to work and to have their deal in order for us to get them on there because we're cleaning up the environment. Do they act like as if that stuff that China's belching out is not going to make it to our borders? This is a closed use system that we live in here. We're greening it up for everybody else's benefit while we hold no one else to account for what they're producing. And that's the incredible, ridiculous part of this, David, that it just blows my mind when they're saying it's for your own good. You just don't realize it. This is for your own good. In America, we have the technology. We have the ability to do the best, cleanest, safest, most efficient use of these things because we have worked hard to do that. And we're the ones that they're shutting down while we let the ones that are struggling to even be able to figure out how to make it work.
You're exactly right, Chip. Joey, you want to chime in here? You were at that meeting down in Rock Springs.
I was, and I want to point out the fact that Representative Nyman speaks eloquently to the content of what was, and more importantly, wasn't answered in that hearing. I look at the procedure in which these bureaucrats from the top of their departments all the way down to the lowest representative on the ground utilize a process of not answering these questions. And that meeting yesterday was a great example. First of all, we were called to a public meeting, which ended up being an open house. So there was no speaking session. There was no BLM speaking or explaining anything to the people. And there was no allowing the people to speak to the BLM in any kind of structured or recorded manner. In fact, there was a sign on the door as you walked in saying oral public comments will not be recorded. And when I asked, why was that? And they said, well, we couldn't get a stenographer. So we had to change how we were doing this. But they set these things up to not be able or to appear to be unable to not answer to or take questions from the people directly. So when I walked around, I had to change my game plan because there was no centralized meeting. They had representatives standing around a bunch of maps talking about their specific portion of the BLM's response to this and the plan for that. So I decided to ask each and every representative I could find the same question. And my question was based on access to these lands, the same thing Representative Hageman asked. And my specific question was, there's a difference between a granted right-of-way, which is a permit from the federal land manager to utilize those, and the law of adverse possession. Because we're not just talking about oil leases and mining rights. We're talking about private property owners that have houses, primary residences out in these areas surrounded by BLM land that may not be able to access their homes. And each and every individual I asked that same question to, I got a different answer.
Well, of course you did, because they're not on the same page.
And some of them got a little testy because I pushed the, well, how does your department have the authority to make a rule that supersedes a law? And of course they couldn't answer. But the one consistent answer I did get from all of them, and this is where I see that pattern, that training, that directive from the top. The answer I got on almost everything was, that would make a great comment if you want to write that down and submit it to us. And I had to say, this isn't a comment. This is a question. How am I supposed to comment on what you're doing if you can't answer the question? Like you asked yesterday, what are the definitions to these words? I looked in the glossary that they attached to that EIS. None of those are defined except for one, and it's so poorly defined, it uses its own term to define itself. So you still don't know what it means. So other than that, you know, I see this as a direct attempt to usurp the people's understanding and involvement. And I'm going to go and place blame where blame is due, because they're looking at the Rock Springs field office as the driver for this. That's not it. That's the test site. The driver for this is the person that manages all of the areas around the Rock Springs field office. And that individual is an individual that's known to me. The Bureau of Land Management High Desert District manager is a gentleman named Jason Gray. He's the former prosecutor out of Carbon County, who tried to make a living out of ignoring people's civil liberties and taking their guns. Now he's advanced his resume to a place where he's not worried about your guns. He's going to take your land. And he was dressed up in his cute little cowboy costume, looked like a cheap five-year-old Hopalong Cassidy trying to look like an everyman. But I'm telling you, this is the same type of sneaky, ignoring the people's rights. I have a legal loophole argument, and we're going to do what we want because we think it's right while we're resume building. It's a pathetic attempt to usurp the rights of the people.
What do you think about that, Chip?
Well, how do you argue with that? I mean, and I was not at the meeting, so I appreciate Joey's, you know, insight into what was going on. But I know at the meeting there in Pinedale, when we listened to those representatives from the BLM talk about, you know, the plan and kind of what it's going to do. And there again, you know, they were also saying, you know, write down your comments, send them in. We take comments from everybody, and we don't put any more weight on a person that is going to be affected locally as opposed to somebody from the European Union that wants to opine on what's happening here on the United States. We take all opinions and all comments, and we weigh them against, you know, each other, and we come to some kind of an understanding of what maybe or maybe doesn't need to be changed. And I think that in and of itself is fouled, or a false way of dealing with this way, or a fouled, I can't even say it right. It's a flawed, that's what it is. It's a flawed way of doing this, because I think you need to take more consideration from the folks that are there in Rock Springs that are going to be directly impacted by what these decisions than somebody from another country. These are the folks that are boots on the ground that are going to be directly impacted by the decisions made by this bureau. And why wouldn't you give them more weight as to their opinions and how this is going to affect them directly? You know, and another thing, David and the rest of you guys, that was just mind blowing to me is the way they were explaining what they were doing. It's like we're doing this inside of a bubble. It's only going to affect our lands, the BLM lands, as they looked at it. You know, we're just making these decisions on our lands. Everything that they do, everything, like Joey just alluded to, there's people that are surrounded by these folks. How does the decisions that they're making not directly impact their ability to manage? If you've got somebody that is no longer, and if you're raising sheep, was the analogy that I used at that meeting, you're a sheep rancher, and your main primary source of income is wool and lamb meat, you got a guy, a neighbor right there that's not fenced for him. has a non-lethal policy for controlling predators, he's going to put you out of business. They won't stay on the BLM. Everything that they do is like my example, a stone dropped in a pool of water. The ripples move out. They look at this, and it's so ironic to me. They look at it like it's just my deal here. It's just us. We're just going to do this on our lands. Everything you do affects the people around you. This will get to my corner of the state. I'm saddened at what the folks have to deal with down there in these areas that have a vast amount of BLM lands that are having to be managed, because I don't think they have a realistic grasp of what it takes to stay in business, because I don't get the opportunity just to raise your taxes if I want to spend a little bit more or I'm short this year. The federal government's just going to put money to them to help them out if they poorly manage their lands. Their lack of management will put the rest of us out of business because we can't control what's happening on their lands. And they have no regard, seemingly, based on the information that I'm reading. You know, I mean, Jim Magagna put together that paper that was very good, and it was just a quick overview. He's gone and done some other research. And I mean, they had right in there on page four, for example, page four, number 260, economic impacts. A number of livestock grazing management actions under Alternative B could reduce the number of AUMs available for grazing, increase expenses, or alter management practices of operators. To the extent that some ranchers cannot adjust their operations to make up for the losses of the forage on the BLM administered lands, the non-market values associated with some of the ranches in the planning area, including provision of non-market lifestyle values of ranchers and open space amenity values to other residents and tourists, could be negatively impacted. Really?
Really?
Negatively impacted. You know, it's like, come on, guys. You're putting people out of business. We can't be doing that in Wyoming. We need to be making this an environment that keeps people working and is growing and developing our resources, not turning this thing into a sanctuary that is unusable and is not producing to keep this country viable and safe.
I got a couple of things to throw into this. First one is I tried to run House Bill 212, which was to limit federal overreach. And I think it was Wildfile that said that was the dumbest bill run this year. But this is exactly the kind of thing that it was meant to handle. I want to point out that I've gotten used to the altitude here. And so I'm going to slip the oxygen back into my nose, and I'm going to go up another 30,000 feet. Because as I listen to this discussion, I'm inclined to want to say, why? Why is this happening? And a lot of people will say, okay, here comes the conspiracy theorists. You know, you got the Illuminati that want to control everything. And I don't know whether that's what they want to do or not. They've never invited me to their meetings. But I have noticed something that I haven't heard anybody bring up yet. And it relates to what we were talking about earlier in the state of Wyoming, a change in the butts and the seats. We are fighting a losing battle here, and all we're doing is treating the symptoms until we realize what the real problem is. The real problem is federal debt. They have to back up that debt, and so they go on a land grab. They limit the extraction of the valuable minerals and resources that are underneath that land. They expand national parks, wilderness areas, national wildlife refuges, state parks, conservation easements. All of this is trying to secure enough land and the resources that are contained with it to be able to make their debt viable to foreign objects, to foreign entities. If the government were as small as what the four of us that are here today would like to see, there's no way we'd have the national debt that we have, because it could not possibly justify it. But by going out and seizing all of this and then keeping it in a quote-unquote pristine environment and equality, what they're doing is conserving the land, not for our children, but for the people whom we've enslaved ourselves to. They don't give a damn about us.
And how long do you think it's going to be before that national debt gets to the point and we have gone,
we're already
nose to nose, toe to toe with China, and they say, nope, that's it, bill's due. And then you see the Federal Debt Reduction Land Transfer Act, where the 48% of Wyoming that the federal government owns and manages becomes
China.
China.
Yeah. Well,
Chip.
Yeah. Well, I just was sitting here writing a few notes as I was listening to you guys talk again. The big issues here that we see is when you set aside land, because now we're seeing a discussion that's starting to come up where we're gonna look at non-use as a use, and we're gonna take away cattle grazing on it. We're not going to allow it drilling or mining or anything like that. We're not going to allow you to drive over it with four wheelers to go someplace. We're gonna idle this land, and we're gonna take it out of use. And when you start looking at the resources, and they say, well, that'll generate revenue. You know, these people will pay a very handsome fee to take land basically out of production. Then what you're doing is you're limiting our ability to provide for and protect ourselves as a nation.
You're protecting. You're protecting the people that we owe. We're saying very much the same thing.
Well, it's the monetized value of environmental justice.
Oh man, Chip, did you read those in there? Environmental justice and intergenerational equity and all of that crap in there.
To the point where it just becomes so frustrating, and you want to keep reading, but you can't, because it's just. I don't know, guys. To me, there's just a real disconnect with where we need to head as a country in order to provide what we need for an ongoing support of generations to come. They all believe that if we turn this into a nature preserve, it's good for the future. I believe that if we don't manage the lands well and help them and make them produce, then we are cutting, again, our nose off to spite our face. We're hurting the next generation by not managing our lands effectively. And non-use, gentlemen, from a ranching perspective, the lands that produce the least on my ranch are the lands that I work the least on. The deer go to the fields that I've been working. The hunters come down out of the national forest up there and say there's no wildlife up in there. We don't see any deer. But boy, when we get down to where the private land begins and you guys are farming and you're managing your acres and your rotational grazing and the grasses are growing and you're cultivating the ground, that's where all the wildlife is. Well, you know why? It's because we're managing it, because we need it to produce for our livelihoods. But when you look at BLM and other lands that they say, well, you know what? We're doing all of you a service by stopping the use of this land because we want to sequester CO2. That's the other big thing. We've taken CO2 that is a building block for all forage on the face of the earth, which ultimately is nothing more than how we feed ourselves. And we've called that a bad thing now. That's a dirty gas that is harming the atmosphere. I've read studies, if you want to throw studies out there, where they say that our atmosphere in the earth right now is about 60% deficient of ideal growing conditions in CO2. We need more CO2. And I'm confirmed by that because go to greenhouses and ask them if they're buying CO2 to pump into their greenhouses to help their plants flourish more and produce more. They are. So if we've got an overabundance of CO2 on this earth, and that's what we're all scared of, and we're gonna really work hard now to sequester this, to suck it out of the air, to store it in these idled lands that will sequester it, then why are greenhouses pumping CO2 into there to increase the production on their plants? I mean, there's things like that. They're like, that doesn't make any sense. Why? That's just common sense. So there's so many things that play in this. And, you know, you talk about the 30 by 30. Yes, 40 by 40, 50 by 50% of our areas that are going to be in conservation use and taken out of production. As the population of the world increases, how do you feed people when you're taking land out of production? You don't. And so that feeds into the whole idea. Well, we got too many folks on this earth, and we need depopulation.
And there's a reason why back in the day, Sally Struthers could feed those kids for 19 cents a day. We couldn't do that today if we tried. And it's not because of the cost of food. It's because of the availability of the land to grow it and the regulations that monitor and restrict the use of those lands.
Well, spot
absolutely
on.
Joey. Go to the Netherlands, talk to those folks in the Netherlands and see what's happening to them as they cut off the ability of farmers to produce food for their nation.
Spot on. Well, I, you know, Chip, I have to sight in my hunting rifle. Maybe I'll use this BLM plan, 600 pages long. I mean, it'll make a pretty good target. Well, Chip, I appreciate your time and thanks for coming on the program. And I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, gentlemen. And hey, guy, by the way, guys, congratulations. I hear you guys are putting a station together and are going to be doing some big things there. So I hope everything goes well, and we appreciate you getting the word out, and we look forward to hearing and doing some great things with you guys.
Well, you know, Chip, we've got this big launch party coming up on the 7th. You and Joni should really buy tickets and come hang out with us.
They don't have to buy. They don't have to buy tickets.
All right. Well, see, you just ruined my whole thing, Ken.
I did.
Well, Chip,
so where are you having this big shindig?
It's going to be at the Eagles Club here in Sheridan. It's kind of a different venue, but I think the way they're going to set it up is going to be, it's going to be great. You know, we're all looking forward to it. It's really exciting.
All right. Well, that's awesome. Sure. Appreciate what you guys are doing.
Are you looking forward to it, Chip?
I am. I'm planning on being there.
That's what I needed to hear. Thanks.
Well, Chip, thank you very much. And you have a good day, sir.
You guys too. Thank you.
When we come back, we've got a couple of different funny stories for you. And since we have the three of us here, I see no reason why we shouldn't do that. But first, our last absolutely outrageous profit timeout. We'll finish up the program in just a second, but first, one more absolutely obscene profit timeout. Are you the type of person that thinks it's a good idea to go buy a box of hair color at Walmart, do it yourself, and then when it doesn't turn out quite right, why not just try to do it again? That, my friends, is how you end up with orange hair. Let's be honest, not that many of us know exactly what is going on with that box of hair color. That's why you just shouldn't do it. A better idea is just to call Christine at the Bombshell Studio. She's a certified Redken specialist, and she knows exactly how to get you the exact look that you've been wanting. All the while to keep your hair healthy, which is exactly the opposite of what will happen if you go and try to do it yourself. So give Christine a call. Her phone number is 307-752-4844. That's Christine at the Bombshell Studio. Do you like hot wings? Yeah, me too. In fact, I'm obsessed with them. And the best hot wings in the state of Wyoming are from the Wing It Food Truck. They travel around the state, going from town to town. All you have to do is go to their Facebook page, the Wing It Food Truck, or go to cowboystatepolitics.com and look underneath the sponsors tab, and you'll find their schedule there. You know, I personally recommend the garlic parmesan wings. They're absolutely amazing, but they've got several other different flavors, not just hot wings or garlic parmesan. You'll find exactly what you've been missing this entire time. So go to the website, cowboystatepolitics.com, and look underneath the sponsors tab. And that way, you can plan your entire week around where the Wing It food truck is going to be. I get it. Actual summer was really kind of short in Wyoming. And we all know what that means. Fall is here, my friends. And with it comes some pretty unpredictable temperatures. You need to be prepared for all of it. Sometimes we have all four seasons in the same week. One of the best ways that you can do that is to get a nice warm hat from New Trend Hats. They have a wide variety of hats for both men and women, and they're sure to keep those ears of yours nice and toasty warm. So go to their website, newtrendhats.com, and make sure you're prepared for whatever is coming. And now, the conclusion to our program. Welcome back to the program. David Iverson, firmly ensconced behind the very pretty, very shiny silver cowboy state politics microphone. If you're just joining the program, I have Ken Pendergraft, Representative Ken Pendergraft, and the illustrious Joey Correnti with me in the studio. Gentlemen,
need a bigger studio.
Negative.
I think you meant lusterless. I mean, you're illustrious.
Well, that's true.
I'm not nearly as shiny as your microphone.
You know, guys, I don't often agree with the Biden administration. But I have to tell you, I came across an article this morning while I was preparing my stack of stuff where I kind of do agree with them. From Breitbart, in an article entitled Biden Administration Constructing Migrant Encampments in National Parks. Now, I have to say that I can only go a quarter of the way on this because I don't think we need migrant encampments in every national park. But I was thinking we might be able to have a really nice one in, like, I don't know, February in perhaps Glacier National Park or perhaps in Southern Yellowstone. What do you think, guys? I mean, I'm all for it.
I think if I say what's on my mind, I'm probably going to have a lot to answer for.
Oh, that's right. You're encumbered by all these rules and stuff.
With grizzly bears. But
I think I'm already getting sued for so much stuff. Might as well throw another one in so they have to focus on one thing. Give them so many options they can't pick. But I would be careful because even though the headline, the intent, and even the executive order or the draft bill that's going to do this is going to say migrant camps, that's just what they're telling you it's going to be. Here comes my tin hat deal. Tinfoil hat coming on, and here we go. Yeah, it's not going to be migrant camps. It's going to be FEMA camps for those of us that they don't like. And then the houses that they pull us out of is what they're going to give to the migrants.
You see, I'm okay with that, too, because we live in Wyoming, and we know how to deal with grizzly bears. We know how to deal with mountain lions and wolves, and all of them involve guns. And, you know, we might be able to hack it. In all seriousness, though, really, so we're going to set up migrant camps in our national parks. And I mean, it's been a long time since I've been to Yellowstone, but that is not a place that I think that anyone would want to defile with some sort of crazy camp. I mean, am I wrong?
I don't think anybody's allowed to do it on their own. I mean, you can camp there temporarily at a cost, but you're not allowed to just roll up in there, buy land and build a house. So what they're doing for, you know, their proposed plan for migrants would be something that'd be completely impossible or ultimately illegal for any American citizen to do themselves. So again, I know I'm always the party pooper. I see all the unwritten problems with the intent on this. And a lot of it goes back to these people manage our government and our lands on our behalf in good faith. At least they're supposed to. But they keep coming up with these plans that only cost the American taxpayer more money and give rights or abilities to people that don't contribute to that system.
I'm a little confused, I admit.
That a feeling you've gotten used to, Ken? Or?
Oh, yeah. I live in a perpetual state of the same, which is okay.
It's called the House of Representatives.
But I read this thing called the Constitution of the United States, and basically it limits federal lands to forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. And yet, even by the time the Wyoming Constitution was written, that had just been kind of shoved aside. And the fact that the federal agencies should own half of Wyoming, we've got to change that.
Well, you know, the argument's always been we can't afford to manage these lands because they're so vast here in Wyoming. And it was part of the original treaty and statehood that once we could, as a state, those lands would be reverted back to state control. The funny thing is, with this EIS report, they show the monetary or monetized value of these lands if you do nothing with them. So that's an argument saying, hey, if the federal government allows Wyoming to reclaim the land it should have had in the beginning, here's a federal government report saying it would produce money on its own if we did nothing with it. So we can definitely afford to manage these lands now, give them back.
Yeah.
The main problem is that all of these decisions are being made by people who fundamentally don't understand what they're dealing with. They don't understand. Well, frankly, they don't care about natural resources. They want to shut them all down, stupidly. But they don't understand how these federal lands are best managed. Chip brought up a really good point that we didn't go into it. There's a big difference between preservation and conservation. Preservation is, for lack of a better example, is what's happening with forests in California, that you do nothing, that you don't touch it, and that you just let it progress as it's going to progress. Well, that has a lot of negative impacts, like fires and burning down towns. And so you have people that don't that don't quite understand what's going on. For example, Michael Ned, the guy that was in that soundbite with Representative Hakeman. You guys know where he's from? I mean, he's obviously not from the neighborhood.
I don't know. Maybe you should ax him.
I'm only going to guess he's not from the Congo.
Well, no, he's not from the Congo, but he is from Guyana. And he emigrated to the United States in 1976. Now, interesting thing about Guyana is that it was both a Dutch and British colony. And do you suppose that a guy from Guyana, who's obviously a lefty, who obviously doesn't know anything about agriculture or federal lands or anything, do you suppose he might be referring to the history of Guyana, one of slavery and racism? Do you think that the ideology of the administration, and there's lots of examples of this, are using these federal lands as a tool to help out, you know, what did they call it? Environmental justice and intergenerational equity. My point here, guys, is that this whole deal with the national parks, the deal in Rock Springs, all of it is a leftist agenda. Of course, all of it's a leftist agenda, but all of it has nothing to do with the lands that they're managing. Everything has to do with this idea of equity and intergenerational justice, or whatever the heck they're calling it.
So you go back to your preservation versus conservation. Preservation is taking the couple of $100 bills and stuffing them under your mattress. Conservation is going out and investing those and trying to turn them into something. And it's interesting that they use this idea of conserving this land for the next generations. What are they really talking about?
Well, they're not talking about conserving it, because conservation, by its very definition, is responsible use.
That's my point.
And, you know, okay, so another quick example, and then we're going to move on. But these people that are anti-hunters, right, they think that, well, why would you shoot the poor, poor little animals? The deer are so cute, and we should just leave them alone. Do you know what happens? It's called rampant disease. Every time a population increases to a point, there's a disease that goes through the population, and it happens almost like clockwork. And you can look at any species you want, and it always happens when there's overpopulation. And the fact of the matter is, Wyoming is an expert at it's probably the best state for managing natural resources. You can look at any of our wildlife populations, our federal lands, everything. It's all managed expertly. But like I said, the point of the BLM is not to manage these properties the way they should be. The point is to take them out of our control.
The other side thing that comes in there is we want to take care of the pretty animals. We can't possibly harvest wild horses. You know, that's not right.
Which aren't wild, by the way.
No, they're a bunch of runaways, and they're inbred, and they're usually not good for anything, but they're pretty.
Yeah, I won't go all the way into what great dog food they make, but you know, we don't go after them. They just happen to die in places.
I had an old pack horse named Alpo.
I think you're right on one of your points, and I would expand on another one. You said, you know, these are people on the left that are in these positions and don't know what the heck they're doing. I think a lot of them do know exactly what the heck they're doing.
Well, they certainly know what they're doing with their ideology.
Yes, and that's the problem. They don't know what they're doing or don't care. I made up a phrase yesterday, or I applied this phrase that I've always had to the BLM yesterday. There's a fine line between not knowing and not caring, and the BLM is walking that line as hard as it can, depending on what question you ask. But yeah, the ideology, the people that run these things, and again, I know it's going to sound personal, but look into the background. I place this on the local managers, especially that Southwest regional manager. This is an individual who's made a living out of expanding his resume by ignoring the tenets of liberty and self-governance within the United States. And I don't think it was a coincidence they brought him on just at the time that this plan needed to be put on paper. And it's again the answering questions without answering them. You know, another question I tried to ask was, in their executive summary, they specifically said this plan will create millions of family supporting union jobs. So the question I had for them was a couple of the individuals that were representatives there. Is there such a thing as a family supporting non-union job? I said, well, yeah, I mean, a job's a job. I said, okay, then why does your department lean into the concept of they have to be union jobs? Well, I don't know. You'd have to ask the director, and they meant the one in D.C.
Yeah.
Said, so you're telling me the lady in D.C. sent this down through your regional manager into your field office and said, this is what we want you to say? What was the point of you guys even putting your letterhead on it? So the wrap-up question I had was, and where is it enumerated anywhere in the Constitution that the government has the right or the fundamental responsibility to create jobs in the first place? And this is something I got one answer to from one person of, well, with all of the disruption in regular economic function, some people are going to lose their jobs, so we have to offset that somehow. I said, so you're admitting that you're purposely going to put people out of business and expect them to say, please, sir, can I have a job? And one of these family-friendly supporting union jobs is what you're going to provide for them. This is not your responsibility. And I lay it directly at the feet of the regional director down there, because I know how he operates. I've seen the slimy loophole crud that he likes to pull with that self-important attitude. And hey, man, you come after me, all right, I'll defend myself. Now you're coming after the people's land, and you're going to put people out of work. And that's a shame.
It goes beyond that, too. If freedom is contingent upon being able to own property. You take that away, you take away liberty.
Own, use, yes, and access.
Yes.
But do you guys know who the real director that's of this whole thing is?
Energy policy is creating jobs and leading to a cleaner, safer planet. Over the past 8 years, the United States has reduced our total carbon pollution more than any other nation on Earth.
Listen to the applause.
But we have to act with more urgency, because the changing climate is already harming Western communities struggling with drought and coastal cities dealing with floods.
Yeah.
That's why terrible. I directed my administration to work with states, utilities, and others to set new standards on the amount of carbon pollution our power plants are allowed to dump into the air. The shift to a cleaner energy economy won't happen overnight, and it will require some tough choices along the way.
Tough choices along the way. This wouldn't be one of them, would it?
I don't even know what you're talking about, because you can't blame Barack Obama for this. He didn't build that.
Exactly right. Well, that'll about do it for today's installment of the program. If you haven't bought tickets to the October 7th launch of the Independence Network, go to the website, independencenetwork.us. They're $50 a piece or $500 for a table. It's going to be an amazing night. We've got a lot of guests lined up. I don't know. Do we want to release who our guests are for the program?
I don't.
No, I'm going to hold
it. I like secrets.
Somebody might have figured out a little bit a few minutes ago, but that's okay.
Well, that's just one of them.
That's right.
Coming up on Saturday's installment of Weekend Update, I've got a great interview lined up for you with author of the book Fauci's Fiction, Michael Schwartz. He was the guy, the very first guy that started testing for COVID-19. He's got a ton of data on COVID-19, and he's got a lot of deductions that you can take for it. And I'll give you one hint. We were all right. They were all wrong. So that's coming on Weekend Update. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns, at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio. State Politics.